Welcome back to the Killer Frogs Killer Minute. This is a Fan Nation College Football Podcast, a weekly show coming your way, brought to you by KillerFrogs.com. I'm Brett Gibbons, and today I'm joined by fellow Killer Frogs writer, Tori Couch. Tori, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm great. I'm really excited to talk what we're going to talk about. We'll get into it in a minute, but before we get into the topic, you know, I'll spoil it. We're going to talk about the transfer portal. You probably saw it on the podcast title. But Tori, I want to talk about you really quick. What is your background, ties with TCU, your college football fandom, and ties to Killer Frogs? Give us the whole spiel.
Absolutely. Sure. Yeah. So I graduated from TCU in 2014. And I've followed TCU ever since. And I mean, I grew up in Boise, Idaho. So I followed TCU from afar growing up, big Boise State fan. So I'm very familiar with Group of Five, Power Five, and all these conference realignment changes that have happened over the last probably close to 15, 20 years now. So I absolutely love all this stuff. I joined Killer Frogs last August, July or August, so almost a year ago. People might not have seen my name on the website lately. I've taken a little bit of a break after basketball season because I started a brand new job. So just kind of trying to make that transition. But I'm super excited about football season, kind of trying to get back in the groove with things and contributing again.
Well, we're happy to have you back, I suppose, if this is back for you. For those that have been with Killer Frogs for a while, you probably have seen Tori's face on the Killer Minute. You and I have talked about the Big 12 championship we previewed, the national championship, all that good stuff. Tori's super knowledgeable. I'm super excited to have you on for this one because I know that you know what you're talking about here. And I'm really excited to hear the insight that you're bringing to the table. So without any further ado, let's just jump into it. We're talking the transfer portal, and I want to start with a general overview. You know, we'll talk about TCU later on. We'll get really in the weeds with that, with you know, the Big 12 and all that kind of stuff. But right now, I just want to talk about in general. I want to get your thoughts. What do you think of the transfer portal so far, and where do you think it might be headed in the future?
I think as we've watched the transfer portal evolve, it's becoming a little less messy. You know, when it first opened, what was that, about 2 years ago? I think it was about the same time as NIL.
Yeah, thereabouts, yeah.
Yeah, so we're roughly 2 years into this kind of new version of a transfer portal when nobody sits out. And at first it was real messy because it's just everybody entering, everybody leaving. And you still get that. The numbers are still really high every offseason for the number of student athletes entering the portal. But I think they're starting to put in these windows and things where it's like, okay, we're going to close this door. We're going to make you think about what you're doing. I do think there's still need for some more guardrails and things like that. But it's hard, you know, as they say, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. But you know, if you have coaches who leave or things like that, maybe putting in, hey, they can enter their name outside of this window, you know, the portal windows, because their coach left, or they need to be at their institution for a full academic year, including, you know, a full season of whatever their sport is, before they're eligible to even enter. And maybe they have to have certain grades or something like that. Just a few more things to make it less chaotic when those windows open, but I think it's getting better.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think those windows are super necessary. I think it was a very smart play by the NCAA, something you don't hear very often, smart play by the NCAA, to put those in place. And I like how you brought up the, unless your coach leaves. Because right now, and I'll talk about this on a future episode, I have so many thoughts, so many rants to say about the no bars kind of approach to the coaching carousel, in that if a coach leaves, it's okay. And they can leave whenever. They can leave week three if they really are so inclined. But, you know, if they leave, then transfers are more likely to also leave. And one thing that I did hear recently that actually made a lot of good sense, and why maybe the transfer portal is so wide open and so in and out and kind of the Wild West right now, is because a lot of these recruits had to do their whole spiel and pick a school during the pandemic when they really weren't able to see what that school was like. Maybe they didn't get a lot of in-person visits, and they didn't see maybe what the culture of the program was really like because the world was just so different at that time. And now we're seeing these student athletes that are there, they're like, oh, I don't know if this is a good fit. Well, of course, it's not a good fit. You weren't able to get on, even get on campus and see anybody face to face. So I thought that was an interesting little asterisk there. But yeah, I agree with you. If we can get some sort of waiver on, did your coach leave, either your direct position coach or coordinator or head coach, then you know what? We'll grant you an exception or a waiver or something to be able to move outside of the transfer window. But I agree. I think the windows were smart. They make things a little more concise. I mean, we still had like 1,500 student athletes at the transfer portal at some point. So it's by no means slowing down. And actually, it's to the point where it's almost too broad a topic to talk about in one podcast episode. So I want to narrow it down, and this does tie into TCU professional transition here. We're looking at their week one opponent, Colorado. We all know what Colorado did this offseason, but let's talk about it because they exploited the transfer portal. And exploit sounds like a negative connotation, like a bad word. It's not. They took advantage of it, right? They redefined how you can build a team, even more so than what USC did last year. So what do you think about what they did? Right now, 247 Sports says 51 commits. I've heard upward of 63 new scholarship players on this team. What do you think about Colorado? Do you think that it's sustainable? Do you think that's a proper way to build a roster? Kind of what are your thoughts on that?
How long do you have?
I got all day.
no, it is. So with Deion Sanders or Primetime, whatever you want to call him there, he's trying to revolutionize Colorado football to begin with. And he's using the transfer portal as a tool in that. And like you said, he's explaining it, but not in a bad way. He's looking at what he's inherited and gone, well, this is not a good team. There's probably some talent there, but it's not deep. I had success at Jackson State. Some of these guys are going to translate to the division, you know, to the 1A Power 5 level. So let's see what they can do. And there were some things when he first got there, I was kind of like, man, kind of rubbed me the wrong way, just kind of being on the outside and as a former, you know, high school athlete and things like that, where he comes in, he's just like, well, these guys are the starters. You can like it or leave it, whatever, whatever, which again, it's his program now. He doesn't have to retain everybody, but just to come in and basically say, well, your job is gone. I'm going to hand it to these people without a spring practice, without any sort of competition opportunity. I thought that was kind of, it was a strong take. It was a very bold thing for him to do. But like you mentioned, it just resulted in so much movement in the transfer portal. And they brought in upwards of 60 new players, scholarship players. I mean, he's dumped the whole roster for lack of a better phrase or lack of, you know, better way to look at it. And he's brought in a lot of talent, but I'm curious if his approach is going to build depth. Because I think he's very heavy on, let's get the guys who are attracted to, you know, I'm bringing in the NIL stuff, to the glitz, to the glam, to the prime time, to all those things. But are you going to be able to retain guys who may not be elite, but are going to build you that depth? And for all I know, someone who entered the portal from Colorado would have been someone to kind of build that depth. So that's one thing I'm very curious about, how his approach is going to work in. And we won't see that until week 6, 7, 8, when injuries start to set in and things like that. But I'm very curious to see what kind of depth his approach is building.
Yeah, I agree. And I'll just go out on a limb and say they're not going to have depth. There's no depth to this roster whatsoever. There's a very high end. There's the Travis Hunters. Mm-hmm. There's I don't know if Shadir, his son, will translate to the Power 5 level at quarterback, especially in, you know, the Pac-12 doesn't have amazing defense, but they have athletes. They have very, very fast athletes, especially in the defensive secondary. I'm interested to see if he translates to that level. My preseason numbers, which are an aggregate of a whole bunch of power ratings, you look at the SP Plus, you look at the FBI, Sagarin, Phil Steele, all these numbers, I compile them preseason. They project Colorado for 2.1 wins. Now, it's very hard to scout and project a team that has completely made itself over, but we saw their win total open at 4.5. That very quickly went down to 3.5, and now we're down to 3. I'll be honest, I don't think it's going to translate into wins. I think TCU takes care of business week one. It should be a similar score to what it was last year. Colorado's going to play a whole lot faster. They're going to be interesting. They're going to be a great TV show.
Sure.
Like that week one against TCU will be must watch because TCU is also almost completely brand new this coming year, with the exception of the head coach and like two offensive starters. So I think it's going to be a great, great TV show. I think it's going to be great entertainment. You know, Deion Sanders is doing something new, and I can appreciate that. I can appreciate the fact that said, hey, what if we try to build a roster new? And guess what? If Colorado does really well, well, first of all, Deion Sanders will bolt for UCLA or another giant program that opens up and take a whole bunch of money. But it'll be fascinating to see if that works. And I'm not necessarily rooting against for it to work. I know a lot of people are because they don't want to see this kind of movement. You know, it's hard to get attached to a team when your players change every year, accelerating it from 3 to 4 years, how college, you know, just kind of cycles through. But I kind of understand it, especially from the other programs that maybe got their players poached. Like if you're a Jackson State fan, well, that's too bad. You just lost everybody. Maybe you're a Colorado fan now. So that kind of sucks. But something I jotted down that I think relates to Colorado and the transfer portal as a whole, I believe it is a necessary change to win. And I don't mean bringing in 63 brand new scholarship players. I mean how Alabama attacks it, or how Texas, we'll talk about it, attacked it this year, where you're bringing in a few pieces, maybe 6 to 7 pieces that are plug and play right now, or maybe provide your team with a little bit of extra depth. So that transition, let's talk about the Big 12, because they were quite active. The league itself is going to be really exciting this new year, coming year. If you have not listened to the first episode's podcast, go back there. I talk with our editor, Barry Lewis, about the newness in college football and all that is. And with that is conference realignment. So, but let's talk about the Big 12. I know you have some thoughts on some of the teams. Who do you think are the teams that might have excelled in the portal that stood out to you, or maybe the opposite, maybe got really, really burned by the transfer portal this offseason?
Yeah, there were a couple teams that kind of stood out to me as I was looking through things. One of them was Iowa State, and I don't know that they necessarily got burned in the portal, but they didn't really use it. They picked up Arlen Harris, a running back at Stanford, which they definitely need some help on offense. They had the worst offense in the Big 12 and one of the worst offenses in the country last year. That's kind of about all they did. They just picked up a handful of guys. They didn't really lose a lot. So I find that very interesting. It's, you kind of wonder, does Matt Campbell have something in the wings that just nobody knows about, or, you know, have some incoming recruits that he's just overly excited about. But I found their lack of movement really interesting after the season that they had.
Yeah. I know Iowa State is a lot of inexperience because after the 2021 season, they lost a ton. They lost Breece Hall. They lost all their guys. And Brock Purdy and all them. So I get it. They're kind of in a rebuilding year. They're a young group. They did rank dead last in the Big 12 in the transfer portal with 2 whole commits. One thing I noticed, though, is they lost a lot up front. So I don't know if anybody here is a diehard Iowa State fan or just really in the weeds here with Iowa State. But they lost 5 defensive linemen outbound in the portal. I don't know if these guys are necessarily starters because they transferred to Boise and Bowling Green, South Dakota State, Louisiana Tech, and one is uncommitted so far. So I don't think these were going to be all conference guys or maybe even starters. But to lose that depth, particularly on the defensive line in the Big 12, where you have to rotate teams in when you play Texas Tech, who runs 90 plays a game, you can't have the same 3-down lineman the whole game. I think that does hurt them. And I like how you kind of brought up I don't know if they got hurt, but they didn't use it and they missed out. And I think that is possibly the way that the transfer portal is going to necessitate going forward. Did you use it? Yes or no. And if you didn't use it, I don't know that you're going to excel.
Yeah. And I think part of that too is how these coaches are adapting to the portal. I think, like we talked about earlier, Colorado is going to be a prime example of how deep can you go? Kind of where's that line of how deep do you go into the portal? Before it just, there's no return on your investment. So I think you do have to be careful when it kind of comes to that, to see what you're losing and you're gaining. Another team that stood out to me because of the amount that they lost, but also the amount that they brought in to maybe try and balance it out was Oklahoma State. They lost seven players who started at least half their games last season. Now they got decimated by injuries at the end of last year, so some of those guys probably would have kept playing, etc. But they lost 16 at least to the portal. And you're talking starting quarterback, starting running back, a couple wide receivers, one of which ended up at TCU, linebackers, DNs, like major pieces. And they did a decent job of kind of filling those holes. They picked up a linebacker from Tulsa, Justin Wright, who they kind of expect to kind of just fill right in, right into what they're doing. They did pick up, there were two pickups that they had that I found very intriguing. I'm curious to see how they play out. They picked up Alan Bowman out of Michigan, who some people may recognize that name because he played at Texas Tech in 2020, and he wasn't bad. He looked pretty good. I think he had some injuries that derailed him a little bit. Then he's been in Michigan for the last two seasons, sitting on the bench. I have a lot of questions. You know, is he going to be in his 2024? Is that good enough? Does he fit what Gundy wants to do? I thought that was a very interesting pickup when they're kind of in this limbo year at quarterback, because they have an incoming true freshman from Nebraska. Mike Gundy doesn't like to play true freshman unless he has no other options. So he definitely brought in Bowman as that transition. But I'm really curious to see how Bowman's gonna fit there and how that's gonna go.
With all the quarterbacks that were available in the portal this last cycle, and even at the time that Alan Bowman committed, you kind of have to wonder what's going on in Stillwater. I don't want to overreact or, you know, talking head hot take it, but why was it Alan Bowman? And no offense to Alan Bowman, like you said, he was perfectly fine in the Texas Tech system in 2020. He may come out of this season with 3,000 passing yards and 25 touchdowns, and that's great. That's a complete win for Oklahoma State if you can do it, but to me, Oklahoma State's should be a little bit more of a destination for some of these high level guys, especially when you look at that roster and see what they were offering at quarterback and be like, if I come in here, this job is mine. But you saw Will Howard go to Ole Miss, and Spencer Sanders, who transferred away from Oklahoma State, went to Ole Miss. Jackson Dart. So now they have a three stack at the top, and I know Ole Miss is the SEC and they have the best facilities and Lane Kiffin, and I get it. But if you're looking to play college football, why not Oklahoma State? So I'm kind of wondering what's going on in the program there. Like we said, mass exodus of transfers. Mason Cobb, all conference, he's gone. Trace Ford, all conference, he's gone. And Dominic Richardson, who's a pretty good running back, is also out of there. But I do like what they did at receiver. You mentioned bringing in Justin Wright, linebacker from Tulsa, really nice player. But they brought in Dazon Stribling from Washington State, and they also brought in Arlen Bruce from Iowa. Totally get why you'd leave Iowa. If you're a wide receiver, you want to catch some passes. Oklahoma State's a good spot. But these are two nice players. And they also picked up an offensive tackle, Dalton Cooper, who's pretty good too. So I agree with you. They lost a ton, but I'm also intrigued by the pieces they brought in. We'll see with Alan Bowman, won't we? Might be perfectly fine the bridge quarterback.
And I think he is. And I think the other pickup that they had that I'm very curious about is, it's at the wide receiver position. It's Leon Johnson III. He's a Division III All-American from George Fox.
From where?
George Fox University. I believe George it's in Oregon. Fox. And I only know this because I'm from that area of the country.
Amazing.
But he, I looked up, he had 21 yards per catch last season, 14 touchdown. He's 6'5". He's just speedy. And so he's got talent. And so this feels like a prime Mike Gundy. I see talent. I see potential. I've got, I lost some receivers. I need someone to come in, step up. Let's do this. And he clearly sees something in his stats and his All-American status. Very intriguing. But that's another one I'm fascinated to watch and see how that plays out, especially when you have a brand new quarterback too. It's not slasher with Spencer Sanders, where he's got pre-established relationships, all these receivers can come in and make an immediate impact. But Johnson really stood out to me just because he's not coming from a group of five or anything like that. He's coming from Division III.
Well, Oklahoma State and Mike Gundy specifically does have a track record of bringing in D3 slash JUCO guys who are very fast and turn out to be very good. And I'm not comparing Leon Johnson to Tyreek Hill, but that is a name that he has brought in before. And now we see where Tyreek Hill is, one of the best receivers in the NFL. So I trust it. If he's looking at someone who, you know, under the radar, I've never heard of Leon Johnson. I've never heard of George Fox University. Apologies to all the grads that are listening to this. But yeah, I that's really intriguing. Really intriguing. I want to talk about one of the Oklahoma is the number one transfer team in the Big 12. I don't really want to talk about them. I want to talk about Texas and one specific player that they brought in. And we were chatting before we went before we hit record on this. His name's A.D. Mitchell. He's a wide receiver from Georgia. I'm bringing him up in particular because I want to put him on people's radars. Right now, Xavier Worthy runs the show on the receiving core of Texas, and they bring back Jordan Whittington. They bring Isaiah Nayer, who they brought him from Wyoming last year, big deep threat towards ACL, did not play last year. Maybe people forgot about him. But A.D. Mitchell, Adonai Mitchell from Georgia, out-targeted every other receiver in their spring exhibition game. He was the go-to target in the red zone. He is a freak. You could throw it within a two-car garage span of him, and he will catch the football. One hand, two hand, no hand, it doesn't matter. I do want to put it on the radar because I do believe at the end of the year that he will be the targets leader for Texas. Maybe he's not the yardage leader, since Xavier Worthy is a down the field guy and A.D. Mitchell's kind of a get to your spot, throw you the ball, catch ball. But I do believe that this will be the leading target getter on Texas. And he was hurt last year, so you don't really hear a lot about him. He was kind of buried at Georgia before. Did have a touchdown national championship game against Alabama. But he's dangerous. He's a very, very dangerous player.
Yeah, he was a name that I remember last year, like you say, kind of buried on the depth chart a little bit. But when he made catches and when he was out on the field, even the commentators were talking about him and just the way he spreads the field and how he can catch anything thrown, like you said, within a huge radius of him. So he's a really strategic pickup for Texas. Because in some ways, I think, I don't want to say it's a make or break year for Texas, but it is their last year in the Big 12. Expectations are sky high. You have Arch Manning competing with Ewers. I think it's Ewers' job, but if he struggles, the moment he has one bad quarter, you know, everybody's me talking about benching him. So this is a season where you have to play as well as you can going into the SEC next year. And so I think this is a very strategic pickup to give viewers another solid target and just kind of spread that field and open up the offense a little bit.
Yeah. In my opinion, this is how I think the transfer portal works best. You bring in a big name, A.D. Mitchell. They also brought in a cornerback from Wake, Gavin Holmes, a safety from Arkansas, Jalen Catalon. Like, these are good players. They didn't bring in a million players, but they brought in players that are going to give them high end talent, a little bit more depth at strategic and needed positions. They're not bringing in another transfer quarterback, right? Because they don't need that. Even at running back, they don't even need a transfer running back. I think Texas did a really nice job in the portal. On paper, they look really good. Take a shot every time you hear that. But on paper, I think they look really great.
I was going to say, how many years have we said that? But
enough.
That being said, at a certain point, it has to come together. And I think that's what makes Texas really scary this year, is at some point that talent has to click. And like I said, it's their last year in the Big 12. So, you know, they're going to get everybody's best shot. They're going to give their best shots. I'm curious kind of to follow Texas too, just solely because they have all these different storylines running about.
Yeah. And I would say we'll know what they are very quickly week two at Alabama, or I think week two or week three. But I don't know if I believe that, because I said that last year. They looked really good against Alabama, and then they lost to Oklahoma State later on. Whatever. So let's dive into TCU. They were really active this offseason in the transfer portal. Luckily, it wasn't a mass exodus like it was the year before because Gary Patterson left. So therefore you had a whole bunch of people hit in the portal. They didn't play very well. 2021 was a very bad season. We'll forget that one happened. 2022 was great though. And I think that Sonny Dykes and TCU in general did such a great job leveraging that. It didn't matter what happened in the national championship game. They leveraged it and said, look at what we just did. Come play for us. And it worked. I think they got a lot of really nice players. Actually have the second-ranked transfer class per 247. Like I mentioned, Oklahoma's number one. Before we get to the good, let's start with the bad. Who left? And I want to get your thoughts. I'm going to start with some players I think might have been actual impact players, players that might have actually contributed this coming year. Number one, Jordan Hudson. We had just landed him in the last recruiting cycle. We actually took him away from SMU. He decided, no, I'm going back to SMU. Sonny Dykes or no Sonny Dykes. Jordan Hudson is gone. Keontae Jenkins, he's an athlete. He plays all around. He has not decided on where he's going yet, but he's a four-star transfer according to 247, which is pretty brutal to lose. Quincy Brown, another wide receiver. It's been kind of a lot of wide receivers left. He's also undecided, four-star transfer. Keon Stewart, a cornerback, he left for Arkansas. I think he was going to be a likely contributor with Josh Newton kind of leading the way there. And then Sam Jackson, who, to be fair, there wasn't really a direct path for Sam Jackson to contribute. And I'm not happy to see him leave, but I'm happy to see him give an opportunity at Cal where he might be able to start this year. Super talented young quarterback. So of those five, are there any that were a little bit alarming or that you wish didn't go, or just kind of what are your overall thoughts?
I agree. The Jordan Hudson one was a little bit surprising. Because he was getting some targets and he was contributing, and I think what surprised me most is the number of wide receivers that went into the portal from TCU, just because you think about who the targets were last year, who the top catchers were. Well, they're all gone, either graduation, eligibility, draft, whatever it is. So these guys, in theory, you're just going to be able to step right up into that starting role. And to see all these guys in the portal, I just thought that was strange. Now, we don't know their story. We don't know if it was, we don't know why they all left. But I found that very interesting that all these wide receivers entered the portal when this year it's wide open to become that top target.
Well, and I want to jump in here and pause you there because I do want to talk about this receiver situation. It is very strange. Quentin Johnston, NFL first round pick, I think it's five of the top seven target getters or It is six of the eight players that had 10 or more targets on the team last year are gone. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about who they brought in. They did bring in some guys, but I'm looking at their depth chart here. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 returning receivers on the entire depth chart. And they run four or five wide. Yeah. So I'm interested to know why there's, at the same time of a mass exodus of receivers to the NFL, graduation, et cetera, why was there also an exodus to the transfer portal? And I know we changed offensive coordinators, but it wasn't after that. It was actually before that a lot of that happened. And it's a very strange, because that seems to be the only position that had a really big exodus. Do you have any insight in that? Do you have any speculation?
No, because I do remember when some of these came out and it was like, it was before the Michigan game, the Fiesta Bowl. A couple of these were in that kind of frame, like you said, before there was any movement with Garrett Riley or anything like that. So I have no insight and I don't want to speculate on what it could have been, because these are also 18, 19, 20-year-old young men who there's families and things like that involved that can change why you want to go somewhere. So I don't know. But I just found it strange, because like you said, you're going to lose one or two at most spots, especially where there's a lot more depth at stuff like O-line and things like that. But to have that number of receivers when basically all the top pass catchers are gone from last year's team, It's strange.
Yeah, I agree. It was a very strange trend. Some of the other people that are on their way, I don't know if they were going to be contributors. I mean, you never really know how players can grow and where they fit in stuff. Altrick Barlow, he was an offense tackle. He's off to Marshall. Actually, a couple of guys went off to Marshall. Landon Watson, a pass rusher, is also gone for Marshall. Kyren Chambers, cornerback, he went to SMU. Blair Conwright, receiver, to North Texas. I kind of get these local guys, you know, maybe they weren't seeing a lot of opportunity at TCU and say, you know what, I'm going to transfer down and get more playing time, or maybe they were just closer to home in the metro. And then, oh boy, I'm going to butcher this last name. Noah Boltikoff, I think, might be his name there. Offensive tackle. He went off to Indiana. So I think those are just notable. There were more guys that left. These were kind of notable, like 3-4-star transfers that maybe had an opportunity to play. Again, just strange to see the wide receiver stuff going on. But TCU did bring in a lot of players, a lot of good players. I want to start with three in particular, and then we'll pause. JoJo Earl, receiver from Alabama. I think that was a terrific pickup. He's from the area. He is from, where is he from?
Oh, I want to say Aledo, but I don't know.
If he is from Aledo. You're correct. Yes. Thank you.
Is it Aledo?
Yes.
I remember looking at it and it clicked.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. He's an Aledo. He's an Aledo alum. Yeah. He's coming back home. Basically is kind of how we saw it there, which is funny because there was opportunity for him at Alabama. Alabama was ready to play him and he was really highly touted there. So I think he just wanted to come home, play for hometown team. It's great. Welcome, JoJo Earl. We're happy to have you. Tommy Brockermeyer, offensive tackle, also from Alabama. Then Trey Sanders, former 5-star running back, is just for good measure, also from Alabama. And I want to talk about those three that we kind of have an Alabama pipeline going on. I believe most, if not all of them, are from the DFW area, though. So you do
I believe
this...
Brockermeyer went to All Saints, yeah.
Right, yeah. So you're seeing this local pride in DFW's college football team right now, the power, and you know they do really well, and all of a sudden everyone wants to come home and play for them. What do you think about those three additions? The two of them, Trey Sanders and JoJo Earl, should be plug and play starters from day one. I think Brockermeyer may have to compete for a spot with Andrew Coker, but you know, we'll see. So what are your thoughts on them?
Yeah, no, I think those are three really good pickups, and to just kind of be in a sense competing with Alabama for attention for guys to come here, I think that's huge for the program. And like you said, they're having success. And so these athletes who went to Alabama because they want to win a national title and compete at the highest level, well, they say, oh, I can go home and do that. You know, and if TCU is able to sustain the success, I think you'll see more of that, or kids coming right out of high school to hear. But no, I think these are great pickups. Like you said, Earl and Sanders will be immediate contributors because we lost our top two running backs. So again, that position is wide open. I think JoJo Earl has an opportunity to maybe possibly be a special teams guy, depending on how they want to use him. He's got some speed. So I think these are three really good pickups. I'm curious with Brockermeyer, to see, yeah, does he get a spot immediately, or does he have to kind of work his way into the rotation and work into a starting role? But just the fact that we picked up three guys immediately, because they were pretty early in that transfer portal process, yeah. To pick up these three from Alabama, I thought that was a really good sign for TCU.
Yeah, looking at our lads, which their whole deal is piecing together accurate depth charts, they do have Brockermeyer behind Andrew Coker right now, right tackle. Maybe he can change positions, move inside, maybe to guard. I don't think that's the best thing for him. But acting as the sixth offensive lineman is just as good as a starter, because these guys do go down. They do get rotated out, and having Brockermeyer ready to go, a talent, really helps the depth there. I like him a lot. I like those three pickups. Some of the other major pickups that we had: Avery Helm, cornerback out of Florida. We're just raiding the SEC. Love to see it. Chance Nolan, a quarterback from Oregon State. He's a veteran. I'll talk about him later. J.P. Richardson, receiver from Oklahoma State, one that you brought up earlier. We have an offensive lineman, Willis Patrick from Jackson State, part of the mass exodus there. I guess he wanted to play his former teammates in week one rather than join them. Beck, a tight end from LSU. Jalen Robinson, a receiver from Ole Miss. And Rick D'Abreu, a defense lineman from East Carolina. Those are kind of these headliners that I saw, the top-rated ones from 247 Sports. Guys I think will play. Maybe they won't start, but they definitely will see the field. So just kind of overall, what kind of, you know, how about this? How would you grade TCU from A to F? What would you grade them on the scale of transfers?
I'd give them probably A-, B+, somewhere in that range. I mean, what's hard with grading these is you can only go on what they've done in potential. They always see this with incoming recruiting classes. You look back 4 years later and the grade is totally different. But I think given who left and kind of the roles that need to be filled, I think TCU did a really nice job going out and being strategic. And not, they brought them out, but they lost it out, and they know they need to build some depth. So I think they did a really nice job, again, getting those intentional pieces.
I agree. I like what they did. Just as a quick breakdown, added 4 wide receivers, 2 tight ends, 3 offensive linemen, 2 defensive linemen. One thing I did not talk about very much, they brought in 1 defensive back, but they lost 5. I don't know if those guys were necessarily starters or contributors, but when you talk about depth and transfer portal, having 5 of them leave, not great. Not great.
Yeah.
Okay, so question for you. Of the group of TCU transfer ins, who do you think will have the biggest impact this coming season?
I think immediately it's going to be JoJo Earl, John Paul Richardson at that wide receiver position. And even Jalen Robinson can fit into there just because, like we talked about earlier, all the top pass catchers are gone. You have to fill in those roles. Special teams is open too. Darius Davis isn't there anymore to return punts and kickoffs and things like that. So I think those 3 are ones that will have an immediate impact or have the opportunity to make an immediate impact and really be significant contributors this season. John Paul Richardson, we talked about, came from Oklahoma State. He ended up being one of Spencer Sanders' favorite targets as the season went on. And he helps spread the field. He's got a little bit of that speed to him. Same thing with JoJo Earl, just brings a little bit of speed. I see the wide receiver position being one where those guys can come in and make an immediate impact. And regardless of who the starting quarterback is, again, you're in a situation where he's got reestablished relationships. Everybody's going through these growing pains together. So it's a matter of who wants to step up and take the job.
I think Trey Sanders will have the most work, like most immediate work of all the ones. But I'm going to zag a little bit. I'm going to say Chance Nolan, I think, is going to have the biggest impact. And I don't necessarily mean statistically on the field or in the wins and losses column. But right now, if you look at the current quarterback room without Nolan, you have 2 sophomores and 2 redshirt freshmen. Chance Nolan is a senior. You're bringing in a veteran. You're bringing in a leader. And I think he's really going to help Chandler Morris. One, he's going to push him in camp because I think Chance Nolan is good. You look at his direct stats, it's kind of like, no. He's a good, decisive quarterback. I think he's really, really going to help Chandler evolve. I think he's going to help him with reads, plays, concepts, because they are bringing in a new offensive coordinator. So he's going to have to learn a new system, get used to things. I think Chance Nolan was just a terrific addition in a veteran voice in a quarterback room that desperately needs it after Max Duggan left. I like him a lot. I think he's going to have the biggest impact on the team. Again, maybe not in the stats column or in the box score, but I think that his presence overall on this TCU team is really going to be felt. So I like what
I agree with you there. I think Chance Nolan is kind of that quiet, good pickup in a sense that nobody's going to really talk about. Because like you said, he might not play, but he's going to do those, what they call maybe intangible things behind the scenes, in the locker room, on the sideline, just to give TCU a little bit of confidence at the quarterback position. But, Chandler Morris won the job last year, but different coordinator. It was a team. So we don't really know what he can do in this new one. And really, TCU fans don't know a lot what he can do in general because it's been a couple of years since he's played. So I agree. I think that's kind of a quiet, good pickup.
And he provides a safety net. God forbid Chandler Morris has to miss time with an injury. You plug in Chance Nolan, you're probably not missing a whole lot. Now, you're missing some of the athleticism and stuff from Chandler Morris, but you're not falling to zero. You're not starting a true freshman. You're not all of a sudden going from, a 7-point underdog to a 15-point underdog. Like, that's not going to happen. Chance Nolan to keep you afloat. I like him. So Thank you, everyone, for tuning in again to the Killer Frogs College Football Podcast. Find us at killerfrogs.com, on Twitter at killerfrogs. I'm at Road to CFB on there. You can find Tori at @ToriCouch_TX and continue the conversation over on our Facebook page. We've got a lot of conversation going on there. A lot. And football season's ramping up, so we're going to have a lot more dedicated to football and college football and all the likes. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever you choose to use. Drop us a review because that's going to help us grow, reach more TCU fans, more college football fans. And if you really liked it, that's honestly the best way to help us out here. So check back next week for the next episode of the Killer Frogs College Football Podcast. I'm Brett Gibbons. That's Tori Couch. And we will catch you all next time.